All right, welcome to Speak for Yourself. I'm Jason Whitlock. That's Marcellus Wiley, that dude. Coming up, we'll tell you how Le'Veon Bell just flipped the story about his return upside down.
And if the Lakers' latest move is actually going to pay off. But we start every day with a Whitlock. So what you got today, big dog?
All right, tonight, when the Panthers and Steelers square off on Thursday Night Football, you're going to hear a lot of conversation about the running backs, the ones on the field and the one off it. Pittsburgh's James Conner is a hell of a story. He grew up in Erie, Pennsylvania, and played college ball at the University of Pittsburgh. He's a cancer survivor. He beat Hodgkin's lymphoma. He's the second leading rusher in the league behind MVP candidate Todd Gurley. Conner scored 10 touchdowns. He's made the absence of and holdout by Le'Veon Bell irrelevant and fascinating. The best back in football has been Wally Pipped by a hometown hero fighting a deadly disease. James Conner and Le'Veon Bell are a different twist on Gale Sayers and Brian Piccolo. This is a remake of Brian's song. But there's another running back story just as interesting on the Carolina sideline. Christian McCaffrey is putting a new spin on the Great White Hope. The Panthers running back is a novelty act in sports that is being mostly ignored because the mainstream media is rigged to talk about race from a single point of view. Only black athletes can be mistreated or underappreciated. Only black athletes can make significant racial progress or blow up a stereotype. Well, McCaffrey is certainly destroying the stereotype that a white tailback can't be electrifying, elusive, and a playmaker. McCaffrey is the white Alvin Kamara, the undersized Saints playmaker. Look at their rushing and receiving numbers. They're almost identical. Their impact on their quarterbacks is almost identical, too. Kamara and McCaffrey have elevated the play of Drew Brees and Cam Newton, respectively. Brees and Cam are strong MVP candidates, once again, because they have the option of dumping the ball to their scat backs. Because of Kamara, Brees is no longer throwing pesky interceptions. Because of McCaffrey, Cam is completing 66% of his passes. But McCaffrey's race makes his story more compelling than Kamara's. You just don't see white running backs light up the NFL the way McCaffrey is doing. About every 10 years, there's a John Riggins or a Mike Allstott or a Peyton Hillis who bulldoze their way to the top of the NFL food chain from the fullback position. A white, top flight, make you miss tailback is a rarity we just haven't seen since Paul Hornung.
Mm.
Have we ever really seen it?
Mm.
McCaffrey is one of the most interesting stories in sports. He's damn near as interesting as my man Patrick Mahomes. We're afraid to talk about this great white hope because he's actually worthy of the hype. All right, joining the desk now are former Pro Bowl defensive back D'Angelo Hall and former offensive tackle Jeff Schwartz. Marcellus, I'll start with you.
Yeah.
Is Christian McCaffrey a bigger story and more significant than we're giving him credit for?
Absolutely. It's a huge deal. And you talk about how it affects the optics. And a lot of times I say it, and maybe it's in a lighthearted way, I always talk about the plight of the white athlete. And black-dominated sports, we're talking football, basketball, obviously. Let's stay narrowly
golf,
focused.
Tiger Woods.
I said dominated by the masses, not just one, the peak. We got one. So I've always noticed it, and this is going to play down and have a tremendous effect at the youth level. Let's talk about it. We've all been there before. You sign up at the local park, registration $65, mama gotta go sell some candy, get a helmet too big, pads too big, and then coach just looks around and you don't know how to play football yet because you're in the youth level. And they start putting you in positions. And how do they usually do that? There's two tests. One, everybody line up, take off. All right, them fat ones in the back, we know what you're going to do. You're the big uglies. And them fast ones in the front, okay, you guys are going to be our skill position players. And then I see it starts to also differentiate by color. Why? White players, even at the youth level, didn't project themselves as being skill players. I noticed it. And now you see a guy who's actually tremendous and having the Obama effect as it did in black people. Black people are like, we love Obama. He beat them at their game and he's staying true to himself and he ain't selling out. McCaffrey is like, y'all know who my daddy is? You know, I'm not selling out. This is who I am. I got wiggle. I got shakes. I got speed. And I'm going to do it my way. What's so tremendous about this is the projection from other people who have sat there before and said, that's not for us. The black quarterback of the 80s is now going to be the white running back of the 2000s going forward. And McCaffrey is going to be the pioneer of that.
I mean, Christian McCaffrey is a stud. I mean, let's be real. You talked about his dad. I played against his dad. The kid has pedigree. I remember watching him at Stanford and thinking, man, this kid's game is going to translate to the next level because he not only can run between the tackle and run out wide and beat you with wiggle and not just power, but he can catch the football. And in today's NFL, you have to have a running back who can catch the football and create those mismatches the same way New England was great. That's why everybody thought prior to the draft that this kid was going to New England because he fit perfect into their system.
That ain't why.
Come on, man.
You're going to be a broadcaster. Bro,
are you kidding me? This dude.
You think they said he going to New England, Boston, because he got wiggle?
Nah, he's
no,
going
they
to
was like, oh, he's there's no place to get more celebrated running back. As a white running back than in New England. Just
yeah,
say that.
Why
part.
Not? Why
okay.
not?
But let me ask you this, D'Angelo, before you go, Jeff. I'm going to be completely transparent and honest. When I saw him at Stanford, I was like, oh, that's nice. I didn't think it would translate to the NFL. I stereotyped the dude. I mean, that didn't cross your mind.
It crossed my mind size-wise. I didn't know if he could take the pounding. But seeing the way that they utilize him now, and even last year in his rookie year, they didn't really give him the ball all the time. He wasn't a downhill runner. They had Stewart, I think, who was the consistent downhill runner. And Christian kind of came in on third down in passing situations to create those mismatches, to just kind of get him the ball in space. And so I thought he was going to be a really good back, but no one could have predicted that he was going to be what he's doing this year. You said Alvin Kamara. Absolutely right. When you break the film down and watch both offenses, the way they use both players, literally they are the same guy, except Kamara might be a little more explosive. But, man, they do the same things with both of these guys.
I think there are many reasons why no one really knows about him. One is because Cam Newton, right? Cam Newton in Carolina sucks up the energy, as he should, right? He is an MVP quarterback. He is the big dog in Carolina. I live in Charlotte. I see the worship for Cam Newton, and rightfully so, right? He's an outstanding football player. He's having the best year of his career this year. Carolina itself is a small market, so all the attention goes to the big star in Cam Newton. Secondly, McCaffrey is not a big personality. He's rarely in front of the media. I know he has a commercial, I think, for something, but even the commercial, he talks like one time. Right?
Yeah,
like he's not a big personality, so his name is not getting out there. And third is he had a pretty bad rookie season. And part of that is he fumbled early in the year, and I think he was protective of the ball too much when he ran into the hole. And to your point about not thinking he could do this, that happened last year where we thought, hey, you know, we stereotype him. He can't run between the tackles, which he did really well in college, too, which is kind of odd that we didn't think he could do in the NFL. And he fumbled early in the year, and he kind of just was a little bit hesitant in the hole. Now, this year, he is going right through the hole, and he's playing some good football.
Listen, I think that he's been a bit overlooked. Again, I like your point about Cam Newton.
Yeah.
Because Cam does blot out the world, and he plays the position that's the most important, and he's been the MVP. But I think the Carolina Panthers and the NFL need to lean into this. They got a Batman and Robin type situation that would be easily marketed. Cam Newton and Christian McCaffrey is a great, easy thing to market and market to NFL fans. I think they need to be leaning into the promotion of Christian McCaffrey and what he's doing with Cam Newton.
Yeah, talk about that. And you were talking about overlooking him, stereotyping him. I remember I was covering the Pac-12 championship game up in Palo Alto, and USC was playing Stanford. And I remember sitting there to a USC player and hearing him, overhearing him say, yo, he nice for real. Okay. Like and when you hear that, I'm trying to decode this for people out there. I thought he wasn't who he is because he's of the paint job. Don't let the paint job fool you. McCaffrey's always had the goods for those who've been on the field, and he's exposed them. NFL lean into this for several reasons. One, when you have a player that this is this dynamic, think about what he's doing. We're saying Alvin Kamara, he's had a better game from scrimmage than Alvin Kamara's had this year. Think about it. Like, Alvin Kamara, as amazing as he is, Christian McCaffrey's had a better game, 194 scrimmage yards. Kamara hasn't even had that this year. You talk about guys like a Reggie Bush who came from the collegiate level, and we were like, yo, that's next level, and then got to the NFL, and we know how great Reggie Bush was.
Well,
Reggie Bush's career, if you look at him from scrimmage yards, He has games better than McCaffrey. McCaffrey already has the third best Reggie Bush game in the NFL in 2 years, brother.
Reggie Bush was a lot more explosive.
Oh, yeah.
Meaning you give him the ball anywhere on the field, he could jump it off. I think that's a little bit of what kind of catapulted Reggie, you know, his notoriety more so than Christian right now. But to a man, if you ask guys when they go into a game plan to play the Carolina Panthers, if they're worried about Christian McCaffrey, everybody's answer is hell yeah. Because they know that this kid is that dynamic. I mean, the film don't lie.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned Reggie Bush. If he played in this era, I think his numbers would have been sky high compared to when, you know, now we use the running back more often. He's in the slot. And what they do in Carolina, they use him and they use C.J. Anderson. They're running screens, reverse screens. They're doing all this crazy stuff with all their athletes. I think Bush would have had much better numbers. He had great numbers, but even better in this era. I just think that, does McCaffrey want to be marketed? You know, this is the problem with Mike Trout in baseball.
Right?
Like, we don't know if he wants that notoriety.
If I'm the NFL, I could care less. I want to appeal to a fan base, a wider fan base.
Right.
People, I'm just sorry. People are attracted to the racial angle in a positive way. When Tiger Woods is making history in golf, obviously golf goes through the roof. When Larry Bird came to the NBA and there was a rival between him and Magic Johnson, of course the NBA was more popular. Marcellus, we'll end on this note between you and I. I think the media is somewhat afraid to celebrate McCaffrey because they feel it'll be interpreted as taking credit away from Cam Newton. And they don't want to face that, oh, you're promoting a little white dude over the black quarterback that's having this MVP-type season. I think you can do both. I think, again, when Terrell Davis showed up in Denver, And a lot of people, to me, I think, try to discredit John Elway. I thought it was just, finally, he's got the perfect combination. It just elevated Elway and allowed him to do more. I don't think you celebrating McCaffrey diminishes Cam Newton in any way. I don't think, and I know a lot of people do, I don't think Terrell Davis diminished John Elway in any way.
Yeah, man, this could easily be Lynn's sanity, but it could last. I mean, yes. Jeremy Lin... But it will continue because Christian McCaffrey will continue to put up these numbers, especially with a Cam Newton and a North Turner system. I'm with you. It's almost like the media is like, oh, this is going to be a little too obvious, a little too much in a market where, let's be real, the criticism of Cam Newton has been exaggerated, and some of it has been race-laced because a guy who goes out there and plays a quarterback position, he's an NFL MVP. You're trying to tell me he can't give a ball to a kid? You're trying to tell me he can't do a little dance? He can't open up his chest and say, I'm Superman? And it's some of those criticisms, I think, were unfair. So now you got a guy who should be celebrated, but you've already been penalized. You've already said caution because I went there before, and really, I went there unnecessarily against Cam Newton. There's something with that Cam dynamic beyond how famous Cam is, but the resistance to Cam Newton being an NFL MVP, tremendous quarterback, that is kind of keeping this market from celebrating what they should, which is Christian McCaffrey being amazing.
All right, welcome back. Welcome back to the show. Time for some big stories. Whitlock and Wiley, D'Angelo Hall and Jeff Schwartz are back. Let's start in Pittsburgh. Well, there have been some Le'Veon Bell sightings in recent days, but the running back still hasn't reported to the Steelers and now is addressing the ongoing drama with some more drama, posting some cryptic upside-down tweets aimed at all his critics. Don't worry, we translated it for you. Le'Veon wrote, quote, I'm not apologizing for what I believe is right for myself, family, and the rest of my peers, period. Also, if you're really finding the time to figure out what I'm saying, you are proved my point. I think he maybe said, you've proved my point. Just about everybody has an opinion on my life and worried about what I'm doing. Don't judge me off my decisions because maybe this isn't what you do. But most people don't take the time to just simply read between the lines, and that's clearly on them. Well, Le'Veon, luckily, that's what I'm good at, reading between the lines. And Le'Veon is attention-starved and attention-hungry. And James Conner's success and the Pittsburgh Steelers' success without him is bothering Le'Veon, and that's why he's gone to upside-down tweeting and hey, look at me stuff. The Steelers are about to play tonight on Thursday Night Football in a huge game against the Carolina Panthers. And ain't nobody really feeling Le'Veon Bell right now. It's James Conner and what the Steelers and Big Ben and Mike Tomlin are doing. This is just, hey, look at me. You got kids, Marcellus. Mm. I know you can recognize this. Mm.
I do. And Whitlock, you shouldn't be so proud of being this old without any kids. Why don't you settle down? Get your life in order, man. Get a wife, get you a kid. American dream, live it, brother.
Yeah.
Let me say this.
You are living the dream.
He's in that vacuum. I don't think it's an attention star vacuum, but he's certainly chasing his tail. But what I mean by that is this is a guy, and we've all been through this before. Whenever there's a sacrifice to make, and there's going to take time for you to realize the dividends of that sacrifice, you got to go through the eye of the storm. Doubt. What decision you make. I went to Columbia, and everybody and their mama and every recruiter said, you're not making it to the NFL if you go to Columbia. And second, third year, despite having success, I had to go through that storm. I wanted to transfer. I wanted to go back to the big schools. I wanted to go through that. And you may look at it from the outside and say, I'm an attention star, but really, my mind's playing a little trick on me. I got to make sure I get over this hump, because right behind that adversity is the victory. He's just right now realizing, God, I have a decision to make before the 13th of November on a Tuesday. Do I go in or do I not get that accrued season? He's also faced with the reality that, yeah, James Conner is out there balling. They don't feel the same impact by me being gone. But I don't think it's attention seeking. I think this is just a guy who's like, is this working? And he had doubts. And with his doubts and with social media and with a fan base that's continued to criticize you, he's trying to respond to that. But attention seeking, I didn't get that from him. I just think this is a guy who needs
a person.
How
about thirsty?
Perseverance, brother. Persevere through your sacrifice. You'll be all right.
He tweeted upside down. Of course he wants attention. Like, why would you tweet upside down? I had to turn my phone upside down. I had to go find maybe an app to play around with this as well. He wants the attention because it's not on him right now. And the thing about him apologizing for whatever, most people in the sports media are criticizing him because they don't think he'll make that money back up on the back end of his contract. He will get paid this offseason. The Jets will pay him. The Texans. Someone will pay him his money. He will get that money this offseason. But people are criticizing him for the idea that he's going to make up this $14 million somehow on the back end of his contract. That's what people are criticizing him for. Most now, the fans want him to play, obviously. But I think fans are now realizing, look, we don't need Bell. We have Connor right now. He's crushing it right now. He's receiving well. He's running the ball well. I think if Bell were to come back, too, the Steelers have to dress him. But he should not start. They should find unique ways to use him, in the slot, use him in the backfield. Why is an offensive lineman who has run with a running back, I would not want to make that change right now. I want to stick with the guy that I know where he's going. He's a different style runner than Le'Veon Bell. I'm not saying Le'Veon Bell is a bad football player. He's quite the contrary. But why would you put him in right now and take away reps from Connor, who's playing so well? Plus, he's not going to be football shape too, which is part of this. But you put him in the slot, man. You do some cool two-back formations with him. He is a huge weapon to use on the field, but just I would not start him at running back.
I mean, we're acting like this is new for Le'Veon Bell. Le'Veon is a rapper. He's always on social media. Him and AB, that's who they are. In that locker room, they're the guys that's always got something, got a headline coming out of that locker room. I don't think he's seeking attention for just because Connor's playing well or something like that. He's seeking attention because that's what he does. That's who he is. We want him to be someone completely different just because he's going through this process? Nah, you're going to get the same Le'Veon Bell. And he'll be there because he'll be a fool not to be there by Tuesday to get that accredited season. I don't know who's advising him, but to me, this has always been the game plan. You know, if I was in his shoes and talking to other agents, the plan was always to wait until the last possible moment, and that is Tuesday, and then show up and let them utilize you as they see fit.
I'm not 100% sure he's going to be there Tuesday. And I may be 80%, but I'm not 100% sure.
If that man don't come, if that man don't come Tuesday, whoa. Wow.
Black Rob, huh?
I would have never seen that happen before. A guy turned down a potential year to hit free agency.
Sean Gilbert did it and got paid. It happens.
I remember that.
There's precedent. Gilbert. Yeah, yeah. Historian.
I'm not sure. Again, I'll go back to attention-starved, humbled, thirsty. What he's had his offensive linemen criticize him publicly and talk about his money publicly, and then go out and back it up, and the offensive line basically is saying to him, no, no, we'll make James Conner the same star that you were. Mm. I think it's tough to walk back in that locker room.
I mean, you can ask anybody in the National Football League, And James Conner is not Le'Veon Bell. He'll never be Le'Veon Bell, period, point blank, period. He's playing amazing football, and he's doing exactly what he needs to do on that team for them to be successful. But let's not get this twisted.
No.
No one's going to ever see James Conner play football and mistake him for Le'Veon Bell. If I'm Le'Veon, I'm not tripping because I know I'm getting paid somewhere. Le'Veon's whole beef is what people aren't really understanding. His whole beef was this. I'm not going out here with a franchise tag and getting 400 touches. Right. 400 touches, taking all those hits for you guys to discard me next year. If y'all aren't going to monitor how many touches I get, then I'm not coming. Cool. Him not coming till week 10 takes a lot of those touches away from him. And then people say, or fans say, well, where's your allegiance to this team? Well, my allegiance is the length of my contract. Mm. I'm not tied to a team and going to go out there and sacrifice my body to a team that's going to just get rid of me after the year. I mean, and if anybody in that locker room can't understand that, then wait till they're in that situation. And that's what a lot of people don't understand. They always want to talk about the situation. But when they're in that situation, it's time for them to get their money. It's a lot of people who've never been in that situation, and so they don't know how to approach it.
Right.
But having been in that situation before, man, them dudes know not to talk about nobody money in that locker room. And when you do,
yeah,
then don't say nothing to me.
Yeah,
basically.
So I talked about this in week one when it happened. The Steelers offensive line cheered Le'Veon Bell on this entire offseason. They posted on social media. They spoke publicly about it. They were his biggest troop. They wanted him to get paid. He told them he'd be there. They came out publicly and went out of their way to say Le'Veon Bell will be here. He did not show up. They were upset about it. They went and talked about him showing up as well. Part of this idea about the money is interesting because he couldn't, for this season alone, he couldn't get any more money, right? There's a weird quirk where they could have given him a couple more million, but they weren't going to give him more money. So the idea that he's talking about their money now, they really were not, because we know Le'Veon Bell is worried about the future. But my question is this. It's very interesting to me that we say the Steelers' offensive line should cheer for Bell to hold out to play for someone else next year. We know this year is a league-to-league year. I mean, excuse me, a year-to-year business. Mm-hmm. So it's odd to me to say that the Steelers offensive line should come out and say, you know what, Le'Veon Bell, you rest and go play for the Jets next year. We don't really want you to play this year. They want him to play this year to help them win a Super Bowl. As Ramon Foster said about week three or four, he said, look, if we win a Super Bowl, we all get paid. We know that. We want you to come back and play for us because we want to win. And we know in this year alone, you cannot get any more money.
Jeff.
It's hard to think about the future if you're currently in the season. I get if it's the offseason and training camp, but that's an odd thing to say.
Excuse me. What happens when he goes out there and breaks his leg or tears his ACL? What happens then?
He could do
Are those old linemen out? He could do that the first rep. You're absolutely
when he comes
right.
Out.
But he's gonna have a little bit of security.
I understand.
Or he's gonna limit that exposure by not coming in until week 10. He's limited the first 10 weeks. He's limited the preseason as far as getting those hits on his body. And so, yeah, I agree with you to an extent, but at the end of the day, Le'Veon is his own corporation, his own company. And I just disagree with the way those old linemen in that locker room handled it, because I felt like if the shoe was on the other foot when other guys have kind of been through similar situations, not necessarily in Pittsburgh, but just in other places, I've never seen it done that way. And that's kind of why everybody starts saying, wow, is Mike Tomlin losing these guys? Now they're back saying, oh, Mike Tomlin's a great coach. He was able to keep these guys in line. And so.
We gotta go. Fox Sports has teamed up with USA Today and their social news site for the win for the first ever Pro Football Fan Index. Last week's question was, which NFL team has the best stadium? Raider Nation came out strong, giving Oakland a surprising win. This week, the question is, which NFL team has the best quarterback? Vote on Twitter or Instagram with the hashtag FanIndex plus the hashtag with the team name. For example, if you think Drew Brees is the best quarterback, just vote with the hashtag FanIndex and Saints. All right, welcome back, Whitlock and Wiley. We're joined now by former NFL player Merrill Hodge and Dr. Peter Cummings. All right, welcome both of these guys. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks.
Merrill and Dr. Cummings have co-authored a new book entitled Brainwash. The book takes aim at one of the media's favorite subjects in recent years, CTE, examining the science behind claims about the effects of football on the brain and exposing the agenda behind a movement I've been speaking on for years, the war on football. Merrill, I'm going to start with you. Given your history in football and that two concussions late in your career ended your career, I'm shocked
that you would be the face of this book. I'm happy about it, but I'm shocked. How did you get there to this point to where you felt comfortable participating in this book?
Well, there's really two subjects there. My career ended because of improper care, so that's a protocol aspect. You know, this is about a scientific aspect that I think everybody is a little confused on or scared by. I don't think I'm any different. I'm a parent. I'm a concerned parent. My kids play sports. I got a son who started playing football at age 7. And I decided, I read the headlines, I've read articles, I wanted to find out the truth. You know, what is the truth of CT? So I really went across this country into Canada, had individual meetings with neuropathologists that have been looking at brains their entire lives. And I'd ask them, what is CTE? And they would say this, universally, this is what they would say to me. The minds, the great minds in this country and in Canada, it is a pattern. We don't know what causes it, and we don't know what it causes. We have cases that are in sports, in football, but we have cases outside of sports, never played football, never had concussions, and didn't have head trauma. And I'm like, well, how can we only hear about the ones in sports when we have all these cases outside of sports? And that just sparked another question, and a journey. And eventually, when I looked at the science, what the science is screaming and saying versus what we see in the headlines, I just believed a book needed to be written so people could understand the real truth of the science versus what they see in the media. And hopefully it'll help empower them with the information that will help them make choices for their family.
One of the things that jumps out also is the phrase hidden agendas. You talk about the war on football and obviously the platform in this book being CTE. What are those hidden agendas?
Well, I think you got to look at this. 1% of the science has been talking right now. 99% of the science is screaming, hey, listen, stop, stop. We're in the observation state. You know, how a headline gets driven, if you look at it and where it comes from, it's really come out of one source, Boston University. You have a lot of other research that has been talked about, has been shown, but when people talk about the other research or the other science that they have that contradicts anything that's been said, you know, they're attacked right away. And we got to create a platform where all of that science can be brought to the forefront so people see all of the evidence just versus just a little bit of the evidence.
Peter, I want to go to you. I want to understand the science or what science you're disputing that's out there. What's in the book that helps people like me that think, I agree with Merrill, there's a war on football and the science is being exploited. What would you dispute? What are some of the common misconceptions scientifically that's pervasive throughout the media?
Sure, and one of the things we did with this was we approached this book as two fathers. And so when you ask a question like that, it's a question I ask myself, it's a question that Merrill has asked himself, and it's probably a question every parent in this country is asking about whether or not their kids are playing football. And when I started to do this journey for myself to figure out if I wanted my son to play football, because I didn't want him near the sport, I started to see these sort of trends in the media versus what's in the science. And the narrative is the way it's believed today is that if you play football, you're definitely going to get CTE, you're definitely going to become suicidal, you're going to be prone to violence, and you're going to be get dementia, and you're going to die. And nothing could be further from the truth. Right? The Merrill has said this the best, and I steal this quote from him. With CTE, we don't know what causes it, and we don't know what it causes. And so I think that's the real theme of the book, is just giving people information and letting them make that decision for themselves. Here's the whole other body of science that nobody's talking about. Here it is. Take a look at it and compare it to what you know.
Well, the Center for Disease Control obviously has shown different science in talking about the links to CTE. If you talk about the study that was done on 111 ex-NFL players, 110 of them having CTE, versus the study of 198 non-contact adults, and zero of them had CTE. How do you reconcile that, Doc?
Well, a couple different ways. And with that study of 110 under 111 football players, that number doesn't really mean much. It's like 12 is bigger than 10, right? It's like sticking your hand into a bag of red marbles, pulling out a red marble and going, I have a red marble, right? Because it's a biased sample. They took subjects who had a symptom, had an idea they may have had this disease, checked their brains, and they found some pattern of tau staining, which is the protein that accumulates, and called it CTE. So if you look at that, if you go to an Alzheimer's brain bank and you test the brains for Alzheimer's disease, and 99% of them have Alzheimer's disease, no kidding. But what does that tell you about your risk of getting Alzheimer's disease?
But that's not analogous, because they actually went to 111 players and said, oh, 110 have them. Then they went to non-players and zero, like right. the zero kind of focusing
well,
on that.
Sure, and I was going to that next. And what that is two separate studies separated by a couple of years.
Yes.
And that study where they found zero CTE in subjects that had no contact sport exposure, what they did is they screened these people in a brain bank who had donated brains because they had a disease. So you already have kind of a biased sample anyway. It's not a perfect control group. Then what happened is they screened them for who had exposure to contact sports, and they did it a couple of ways. First, they read through their medical records and found out if anybody had played a contact sport, and then they searched obituaries. So some of that information was confirmed by obituary. I don't know about you guys, well, maybe him, but in my obituary, it isn't going to say anything about me playing youth football or any football. So you have a little bit of a problem there. How many of that negative group actually didn't have exposure? Then the next thing that happened with that study is the cases they thought, hey, we think these may have CTE. What they did is they ran them through an entirely different experimental protocol than the control groups. And the staining process that they used for that tau is prone to a lot of artifacts, meaning it can show you artificially elevated levels of tau. They didn't do that to the control groups. So we don't really know how many of those positive cases were really positive. And if you break the numbers down, I'm going to really nerd out on you here.
I love it.
70% of those cases didn't have CTE. And then you look out at the wider range of literature, and you'll find right now I'm working on trying to collect cases who've had no exposure to head trauma. I got about 100 cases in the medical literature, never had exposure to a contact sport, never had head trauma, but they have the pattern of CTE in their brains. One's a four-month-old, one's a one-year-old. So you take that one study, there's a lot of flaws in that. It's not a good control group. You can't really compare. It's apples and oranges. And when you start looking at the greater literature that's out there opposed to one study, you're finding that this pattern of tau staining is being seen a whole host of
Marcellus,
different things.
Marcellus, one thing about that he shared with me too, 95% of them had another neurodegenerative disease. So how do you isolate just CTE? That's an abuse of science. You have to disclose it all, and you can't isolate it as one when they have other diseases versus just one.
Merrill, people have watched me on this show harp on defending football. I believe there is a war on football. They've heard my point of view. Why do you believe there's a war on football?
We're in the state of California. You look at what's going on in the state of California. You have some legislation to ban tackle football till age 14, okay? You can start MMA fighting and boxing at age 8 here in the state. Why would you tell me that there's not a war on football or a target on football if you're going to say it's okay to box, which keep this in mind. Now, just make sure, correct me if I'm wrong. Isn't the objective to target your head in MMA and boxing?
Yes.
Yeah.
At 8, we can box in California, yet we want to ban tackle football. Now, and what is the scientific evidence they're bringing to the table? There's no scientific evidence that says there's anything wrong with kids playing contact sports. That's why I think the book's so important. We bring out those things about what the science is saying, but all of the amazing things that are going on in football, especially youth football, from protocols, treatments, therapies, practice structure, the whole gamut, how much better and safer it is. In the nearly 100 years we've been playing this game, the most safest environment we have ever had is right now versus some 95 when all of us played.
I want to ask one follow-up. You've explained that there is a war on football. I agree with you, but again, the why. Why do you believe why is there a war on football? Why are people afraid of football? Why do people want to bring football down?
I don't know I can answer that one. I can't answer what somebody else's agenda is. I just see what's being done, being done without the proper supporting information. You don't have the science evidence of it. You got people talking about youth football, never coached youth football, not certified to coach youth football. I speak from that perspective. What their agenda is, you would have to get them to answer that one.
Being a teammate and great friend of Junior Seau, I am doing my damnedest to be objective up here and do my job, but just seeing that experience that he went through and obviously the result of his playing career, his life kind of combusting together, the CTE that was discovered, and let's be real, the circumstances of his life that certainly contributed to whatever triggers inside someone with CTE, and we know the result of that. Help me with this equation. Head injuries lends itself to CTE. If football obviously exposes you to more head injuries. How come football doesn't put you at a higher risk of CTE?
Well, I don't think there's any scientific evidence that says football or even head trauma causes CTE. Like I said, we don't know what causes it, and we don't know what it causes. So when you talk about something that's really complex, I'll tell you, as a forensic pathologist, I've investigated, unfortunately, hundreds and hundreds of suicide deaths. And they're tragic, and they're terrible. And you can never, ever point to one factor. It's a multifactorial thing. And to think you can open up the brain and lay it out and look at a spot under a microscope and say, that's what caused this person to commit suicide, is there's just no way to do that. So if you have somebody in the general public who commits suicide, well, it's mental illness, and this is a terrible thing. We have to do better with how we treat mental illness in this country. But if a football player at any level commits suicide, it's football, regardless of any other factor that may be going on in their life, whether it's divorce, I mean, drug abuse, bankruptcy.
Let me stop you right there, because you just hit the number one thing, Marcellus. My pushback to your point of view would be this, and what they're arguing, if I'm going to narrow it down. Football's being blamed for everything. Let's don't even research other factors. Junior Seau, what happened to him was a tragedy. How do we not know it might not have been the drugs he may have been taking to play this game rather than the collisions? There's all sorts of things we all know the football players do to get on and stay on the field. The pharmaceutical industry has no interest in you discovering what that does to you. They want to blame you for hitting him too hard. It's your fault, not any of these other factors.
Please don't displace what I'm saying, because I said life circumstances have to ignite with what if the CTE is the cause. I'm trying to isolate that if Junior Seau didn't play football with the same life circumstances, or anybody who doesn't have CTE and have those same life circumstances, is there something in you that can trigger you to go to that place? That's the difficult thing, because if not, I think parents are saying, well, let's remove football just because this is a risk factor. Not that it's going to kill my kid, but as we know, combining risk factors is how you get to this
and
place.
So make sure your son never drives, because there's a more likelihood he'll die in a car accident than of CTE. So don't ever let him drive.
Do you know what the highest suicide rate is professionally? Do you know what the highest suicide rate is professionally?
No.
Doctors. So we should stop medicine. We should stop letting people go to doctors, go to medical school. Doctors have one of the highest suicide rates of any profession, Marcellus. And I think what's happened here is people are uninformed about this particular pattern. We're talking about things we've seen in the headline versus what the science is saying. And to sit there and target and blame something with having no scientific evidence whatsoever is a harmful mistake. You talked about mental illness is a serious thing. So instead of blaming things, let's help them. Let's get them help. I mean, I lost a dear friend. Mikey Webster was my roommate when I got there. I mean, when you have any tragic death like that, I know how it hits home. And now, in fact, I said this the other day. If I knew now what if I knew that back 10 years ago what I know now, I'd have been a better teammate to Mike Webster. I'd have been able to help Mike Webster in better ways to help him through things he was going through, the things that I have learned on this journey and discovered.
Thank you, Merrill. Thank you, Peter Cummings. Appreciate it. Whitlock and Wiley, we're joined now by NBA champion Jason Terry and Fox NBA analyst Iceberg Jim Jackson. Let's move to the NBA.
Let them go.
Where LeBron and the Lakers got a win last night, beating the T-Wolves at Staples Center and getting some help from their latest signing, Tyson Chandler. The veteran center grabbed 9 boards in 23 minutes, including one to keep possession late in a close game. I was shocked last night. I think Tyson Chandler, a really smart move. I was highly skeptical. And then you see it instantly, his impact helping them close out that game, that veteran leadership, that veteran savvy. I gained a little faith in the Lakers. I'm starting to believe that, you know, they may finish 2 games over 500.
Yeah.
I got another 500 team.
I mean, I was shocked at how quickly they just put Tyson Chandler in critical moments and forgot about JaVale McGee, who was having a great year and who has to be salty.
Had a great game.
Salty immediately. Are you kidding me? JaVale McGee has always been criticized because he's not dependable and he's not reliable in clutch moments. And then day one, Tyson Chandler comes in and gets that opportunity when JaVale McGee has been putting it on record in purple and gold as being that
Clippers.
Guy.
Listen at the Clippers. JaVale
McGee.
So you really want JaVale McGee to finish the game?
Oh, hold on.
Really?
As a Laker, looking in that vacuum, absolutely. Now, his entire career, Shaq and the right. Fool, I'm not going there, Jason
okay.
Terry.
Okay.
But look, the thing is, Tyson Chandler didn't even get the rebound.
Yes, he did. That tip out of the rebound.
That's what you're doing in his 19th year.
That's what you're doing, young fella. Let him know. Let him know, young fella.
The tip counts, but I'm going to tell you right now, we want Tyson Chandler finishing the games. You need a wily veteran that has been through the wars. What has been their problem early on in this season?
Finishing games.
Finishing games.
Yeah.
JaVale McGee been on that team, on that floor. So now we got a guy that he can learn from, and it should work out for him.
And, but what he got, though, what they bought was an insurance policy and trust, someone they can trust down the stretch. Keep in mind, we overlook the fact that JaVale McGee sometimes over-rotates and over-helps on pick and roll, which leads to a dribble drive. Yeah. He'll goaltend to some shots, okay, at a critical time. He'll miss some things. So as good as he's playing, it's hard to trust him in those late situations. So what they got with Tyson Chandler was someone they could trust down the stretch of the game to make the right plays, whether that's on the offensive end by moving the ball, setting the screen, or as we saw on the defensive end, he's able to lock up and keep the defensive plays alive. And that's what they bought with Tyson Chandler.
And they got the same thing, and I hate to go here because it's like I'm flipping teams here because I've been down on them, but with Rajon Rondo, he closed out the game.
Yeah.
And they kept Lonzo on the bench, and they went with the veteran, savvy, smart guys because what they're saying is LeBron's going to make the plays. Mm-hmm. We just don't need the other guys to mess it up.
Hold on. No, it ain't they. It's LeBron. Look, look what's going on here. And this is my conspiracy theory that is so real, it shouldn't even be called conspiracy theory. Here's the thing. This is the timeline. Magic Johnson, a month before the season, hey, we're going to start slow. We're going to be patient with Luke. All's good. And we all know that LeBron took his time to get a relationship with Luke Walton, whatever that meant.
Right.
I wasn't reaching out to Luke. Luke, don't be blowing me up either. So, you know what I'm saying? I got a life to live. Finally, they're on the same page. LeBron quickly sniffs out, I ain't liking this. So LeBron tells Magic, this is my theory. He went to Magic. He said, Magic, need some changes. Need me a big boy vet. Let's be real.
Right.
Also, you playing around with these lineups, calm down. And put some fire on Luke. You know why? I'm known as Coach Killer. And I can't have that on my resume in L.A.
Wow.
So as Coach Killer, I'm not going to kill Coach. I'm going to let you do it. Magic immediately walked to Luke Walton after just saying he got time.
Right.
Blah, blah. Gave Luke Walton a couple of them. And then LeBron the next day, this is why I knew it was real. LeBron the next day going to say, our coach put us in great position to win a game. Hey, LeBron, you know I see this.
We in Hollywood. Don't that sound like a script? Right. That sound just like a script.
I thought he was in the room when they was having a conversation.
And now all of a sudden we see a different
you snitching, team. You snitching, man.
You
inside the room.
I'm dry snitching.
Mike, man. Fire.
Come on,
there's
y'all.
A lot of y'all can laugh if you want. There's a lot of truth to what he's saying.
I can say a lot because you know that behind the scenes, controlling the narrative is what LeBron loves to do. Mm-hmm. And he does it in a way where it doesn't come back to him, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to keep in mind, I said this before.
Yeah.
Luke is not Rob and Magic's guy from the beginning.
Yeah.
So he had a short lease, but I don't think anything will happen this year because they understand where they're at. Three things they have. They have expiring contracts. They have cap space, and they got tradable assets. And that's something going into free agency that a lot of teams don't got. That's why they have value.
And they know as this team is constructed today, they got a lot of holes to fill.
Wow.
So I don't care who's coaching them. Coach Carter could come here and coach this team right now. They're not winning the championship.
Welcome back, Carter.
Let's move to an even bigger story, to the team the Lakers beat last night, the T-Wolves, who got another big game out of Derrick Rose. Just a few days after Rose went for a career-high 50 points, the point guard put up 31 last night, including 7 three-pointers. Rose has had a tumultuous run since winning MVP in 2011, but he's playing his best basketball in years, scoring more, getting more assists with a huge jump in his three-point shooting. Derrick Rose, man, the comeback is for real, I think. Last night, man, he and Jimmy Butler, I'm sure, are comparing notes about the rest of these guys and their lack of heart. But the comeback for Derrick Rose is real. I'm believing. I bought in.
I'm bought in too. 46% from 3-point. You got to. And he's still blurry. Coach used to always say in our sport for sure, and watching you guys out there on the court, when you blurry, you got an opportunity, man. You can make things happen. And you can see this guy is finally trusting himself again, sixth gear, because of all the injuries and getting knocked down off that hill time and time again. But also, there's still some tread left. Like, he's only 30 years old, and
he's younger than Steph Curry.
Exactly.
Right. That's so mind blowing.
I love the combo. I think he's
younger than Steph Curry. Look at the years he's been injured. He's missed 82, 71, 57 games. Those were years where he was not out on the floor getting that tread worn down on his tires. He was rehabbing, physically getting back where he could play. Now, I equate it to like running backs, right? When you start seeing them tiptoeing through the hole,
yeah,
it's time to hang it up. Right. D-Rose was tipping there for about 3 years, but now if you watched him, especially in that 50-point performance, he had to bounce. The bounce was back in his step, right? He was crossing them up. He was getting to the hole. He was finished explosively. And now you add that with a deadly jump shot at 46%. He can play another 8 to 9 years.
But how much of it is the mental aspect?
Oh, a lot of it.
I mean, because now it seems like Derrick Rose has peace of mind. A peace of mind that allows him now to go play. He doesn't have to carry the load. You have, you know, Wiggins, you got Big Cat, you got Jimmy Butler, kind of the forefront, the centerpiece. He came in as an additive to add veteran leadership, a guy that Thibodeau could trust. So the pressure wasn't on him. Then he cleared out some space in his life mentally and physically in regards to people around him. So now he's playing with an ease and a comfort level that we haven't seen because no pressure is there. So can he sustain 18 points? Maybe, maybe not. But he can be a threat, plausible threat on the court. Because those three-point shots last night, we haven't seen that from Derrick Rose, even when he was really healthy in regards to stepping back off the dribble in clutch situations, knocking down three. To me, mentally, he's in a whole different space, and I love to see it.
These were contested threes, a lot of them. Him creating the shot, not getting wide open because of defensive lapse. Tell me this, both of you guys. What happens when Jeff Teague is healthy again? Has Derrick Rose taken this starting point guard job for keeps?
You know what? Even if he doesn't start, I still believe he has a valuable role. Again, Thibodeau, he brought him there. He can trust him.
He's going to want to start.
Oh, he's going to want to start. But I don't think that's where he's at in his career right now. I think he wants to have valuable minutes. To me, JT, you understand this. What's the most important thing?
Finishing the game.
No doubt about it. That's the most important thing.
You look at his minutes, 28 minutes per game. There's still plenty of time for him to get those same minutes if he comes off the bench. The hardest thing when you're starting is how do I rein him in and pull those minutes back? I think that's the hardest part for coaches. I know Carlisle told me that at one point when I begged him, hey, man, I've been six man long enough. Get some of these starters' attention. He's like, well, we're not going to be able to monitor
your minutes. But you ended the game. And that's what you wanted, right?
Game. Yes.
When I was later in my career, to me, that was important.
If I'm Derrick Rose, though, again, finishing the game is nice, but if I'm Derrick Rose, trust me, he still thinks of himself as an MVP. He wants to be in the All-Star game.
He can be there as six man. He can be there in the All-Star game. Think about the big shots he's able to hit at the end of the game. You can't do it if you're on the bench.
Think about the fans he's won over now that will be voting. You know what I mean?
Well, he has to play the long game right now. And maybe you sacrifice this year to show that value to another team
where they
would give you the keys.
I know a couple.
Then you can go, a couple of teams are out there, and then you reset your value. And you say, forget the birth certificate. Forget the interest. Like, don't hold all that against me. Look at my game right now. I'm shooting 46% from three. Go get it, D.
All right, welcome back with Lock and Wiley. Jim Jackson and Jason Terry are back with us. Let's return to the NBA, where the T-Wolves are off to a sluggish start to the year, falling to the Lakers last night and dropping to 0-7 on the road this season. The bad start hasn't done much to help all the drama surrounding Jimmy Butler and his trade demands, and last night, Butler didn't hold back after the loss.
Very, very frustrating. To know that we're that close and all we got to do is rebound the basketball. That's been the story for us this far. We've been right there. We've been out rebounding. We got to figure out a way to go get the ball. I think that the season is still young, but we can't use that for too much longer because these games come out quick.
Listen, I watched that every drop of that game last night, and Jimmy Butler's frustration to me is justified. They gave Karl Towns $190 million, man, and I don't know if he's worth $9 million. This guy is soft. He's the no-heart guy. And Andrew Wiggins disappeared, too, and they gave him, what, $140 million during the offseason? He's not jealous of the money they made. He's upset that the franchise was stupid enough to give guys this soft that much money.
Wow. You two things you just said. One, we got to take away your creative control.
Oh, my God.
You just ran with what he said and put it all on Big Cat. when in the, one, Jimmy Butler doesn't talk in code. So if I think if he wanted to call out Big Cat, we have seen.
Who's he talking about should have got the rebound?
Everybody.
Who's
he talking, everybody.
No, Tyson Chandler's tipping out these rebounds. Hold That's on. Big Cat.
He only plays six players. He ain't going deep.
Wait a minute. Y'all acting like in the NBA, most rebounds aren't long and under the rim. He talking to himself, too? He's like, yo, we should get them rebounds.
He talking to himself.
No, he ain't.
He did. Well, then, I know he wasn't talking about Big Cat because he would have said Big Cat. He ain't scared to say Big Cat. No. But here's the problem you got, Jason Whitlock. This is the problem with every locker room I've ever been in. It ain't about you getting paid. It's about who you are and why did you get paid. So the money's fine, but you just said it. He's soft. And I've seen this happen. The Legion of Boom, all the thorough dudes got mad at Russell Wilson getting paid. Why? Not because he ain't a good quarterback, because he's soft. He's a teacher's pet. He's the one that got the apple for the coach. And you got a problem with Big Cat because he's a nice guy, because he plays the game in the right way?
No, because he's floating around the three-point line, and he's 7 foot tall, and he's getting no rebounds. He's not a defensive force. JaVale McGee is out playing him. He's soft.
JT.
I'm just saying. What? Ain't that where the game is gone?
Exactly. I mean, where are you supposed to be?
Who started this? Like, Joel Embiid's out there crossing guys up, shooting threes, right? So, yeah. I don't know. I mean, Cat, yeah, you need to rebound a little more, but I don't think his game is a back-to-the-basket bruiser-type dude. He's nimble.
He ain't built like that.
He's not built like that.
If you can put on your hand right here five guys, man. Really, and go past that who really deserve a supermax. It's not that many right. in the league.
That's where
I don't
messed
care.
Up at.
That's where you. It's probably you. LeBron, Steph, KD, Giannis. Who else?
Westbrook, Anthony Davis.
So if you get past Harden. Six or seven guys, everybody else go get paid because of the way the salary.
That's not the issue, though.
But here's the issue: somebody is going to get paid, whether it's Big Cat or somebody else.
Yeah.
And knowing that Butler probably wants to get out of there, they had to pay him. They had to pay big. They had to have somebody. When Joe Johnson got paid at Atlanta, mm-hmm. was he worth the 70, 80 million? Probably not. But they had to have put a face to the program, to the franchise. Yeah. And that's what they've done. Now, keep in mind, Jimmy Butler is upset. A lot of it comes back on your shoulders, too, in regards to how you approach this season. You're never going to have continuity. I don't care what's going on. You're going to play good one game, Jet. The next game, you're not, because you're not really getting along in the locker room.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have this fluctuation.
That's very critical. The chemistry is very detrimental right now to the progression of a kid like Cat. Like, mentally, he's just like you said, he's a little soft mentally. So if you have a distraction like they're having with Butler and the disagreement, I mean, the kid's in his feelings. Let's just be honest. And it's showing in his performance. But he's an elite basketball player at an elite level. He's a great shot blocker, and the boy can score.
He's not a championship player.
The Minnesota Timberwolves are not a championship team.
And most players in the NBA are not.
Here's my point, though.
Right.
And this is an extreme example.
Okay.
But if Tyson Chandler got a $190 million contract, I don't think Jimmy Butler would be as upset. Because, that's the least. He's a dog, and I can count on him
there
at crunch time.
Yep.
He's not going to disappear on me. This dude disappeared throughout the entire game, just ran up and down the court, no heart. And then Andrew Wiggins, at halftime, retired.
What?
He retired at halftime.
You know, I don't think it's the money with
right.
Jimmy Butler.
It's
I
not.
Think you're absolutely right, right in regards to how he views Cat and also Wiggins.
Yeah.
It's the point that he knows that those guys he can't rely on.
Right.
That's it. I don't care if
That's
they got
it.
$2, That's $200. It don't it. Matter. They're like, listen.
But to me, the value in Jimmy Butler should be as a veteran. How are you going to help them? We know what the problem is.
There you go.
But how are you going to help
there
them
you go.
Overcome that hurdle?
Yeah, yeah.
Right? How are you going to give them some
Yeah,
heart?
Stop punching down.
Yeah.
Like, if you,
that's this generation.
How are you toughen them up? You got to put them
up on this generation, they're going
to
shut down.
He's trying to jump them in.
It's
that's
not,
how you toughen them up. He's trying to jump them.
Ain't old days. Ain't none of that.
Yeah.
Jimmy Jackson threw me in the garbage can. I had 26 points the next night.
What?
Hey, man, we could do that back in the day.
Right. We knew how to respond. If you throw him in the garbage can, you might not find him. You got to go to the dump to get him out.
All right, thank you, Jim. My favorite segment of the show, Anti-Social. Darnell Smith, our social media manager, is here.
I'm back.
Flossing, yes, flossing the Warren Central.
Oh, new money, huh?
Nah, ain't no new money. Laundry day.
Oh, okay.
Fresh clothes today.
Still hitting that laundromat for them quarters.
Yeah, you know, hey, I'm still in a struggle right now. I ain't got that Marcellus check.
What? And that Whitlock check, too. We heard he re-upped, too.
No. let's keep it moving. What's next, Darnell?
Yeah, we're going to start off in the NFL today, where we all know Dez Bryant was just picked up by the Saints.
Yes.
And Twitter has been all over it. And comedian Scooter Magruder is back at it. He posted this clip right here. Take a listen.
Dez signed with the Saints?
He's really about to win a Super Bowl with the Saints.
We have to play Dez. I'm not even going to watch the game.
We're probably going to be out of the playoffs by that time.
This man about to have 3 touchdowns for 300 yards against us.
Watch Dez go for 400 yards and 5 touchdowns against us.
This man about to have 5 touchdowns for 500 yards against us. And an interception.
I hope he does so we can get Jason Garrett fired.
Wearing number 88?
He wasn't doing that good anyway. I don't even care that much.
I'm getting that Saints jersey.
I want to see Dez throwing up the X for another team.
DeMarcus Ware left and got a Super Bowl with the Broncos. The only way you can win a Super Bowl on the Cowboys is if you leave the team.
At least one Cowboy will be in competition for the Super Bowl.
Y'all think Cowboys fans are rooting for or against Dez?
I think they're rooting for Dez.
For Dez?
Yeah, I think Dez is a sympathetic figure in the NFL. Dez means well, and I think most people, regardless of whatever troubles he has, Dez means well. I think people are rooting for him.
Exactly. They miss that passion. Yeah. They miss that fire. And look, it's a seesaw effect. So since the Cowboys aren't doing well, we miss Dez. If they were doing well, yeah, I'm glad we got rid of Dez. It's just result-based. But hey, what's his name? Scooter Magruder?
Scooter Magruder.
Scooter Magruder. Yeah. He got a follow out of me today. Man, that dude is hilarious. And I don't even know why I laugh so much at it, because he's just talking, but he's just funny.
He's
man.
Real. That's why.
Oh, he's hilarious. Good work.
All right, Darnell, what's next?
Yeah, moving on to the NBA. Zion Williamson had an amazing debut for Duke on Tuesday night, scoring 28 points, leading Duke to a 34-point victory over number 2 Kentucky. Steve Kerr was asked about his performance, and his response was pretty funny. Take a listen.
I thought LeBron was... I thought that was a one shot deal, but apparently the next guy's coming. And before I get fined, I'm gonna change the subject.
Is it too soon to crown Zion as the next LeBron?
LeBron's a little too much for me. And I compare him more to Charles Barkley than LeBron James. I haven't seen this kind of size and explosiveness and energy since Charles Barkley. I think LeBron is a bit more skilled than Zion Williamson.
Oh, yeah. I took it as just the talent line, you know, sitting in the heavens. He keeps standing in that line and keeps getting in other lines, size. And you talk about the weight and the height. What was he, 6'7", 270, they say?
280.
280.
Yeah.
That's more than Barkley, because what, the Barkley?
Nah, I think when Barkley was coming out of
6'4",
6'5", but damn near 300 pounds coming into the NBA.
Yeah, yeah, respect to that, but this is not LeBron because it's not statuesque. It's just ginormous with energy and 45-inch hops. That's next level, man. I hear him, man. Crown him.
All right, Darnell, what's next?
Yeah, moving back to the Steelers. We know Le'Veon Bell posted some upside-down cryptic tweets yesterday afternoon. Well, this morning, Antonio Brown was pulled over for going over 100 miles per hour and was cited for reckless driving. The Steelers play the Panthers tonight on Thursday Night Football. And, God, with all this turmoil that's been going on in the Steelers' locker room this season, you starting to feel bad for Tomlin?
No, I'm not feeling bad for Tomlin. And I'm not going to beat up Antonio Brown. I can remember I got my first Mercedes in 2007. And I don't know if I ever went less than 100 miles per hour.
Yeah. You're right.
I was like, what's the use of having it?
Right.
You can't even feel it. It feels like you're going 50 when you're in a, you know, so.
You ever ride in the lap of luxury? I don't know how fast I'm going, officer. My bad. I was going 130. Yeah, man.
They got me at 113.
Ooh.
Coming back from a Missouri basketball game, going from Columbia to Kansas City. 113 in some little rural town.
Rolling, weren't you?
He was trying to get to that buffet.
Oh,
two for one.
It was like 2 a.m. Nobody was on the road.
Jack in the Box.
I was trying to get to Diamond Joe's before closing time. All right, Darnell.
Oh, yes.
Last but not least.
Yes. So yesterday on Fair Game, Kristen Leahy had Derek Fisher, and he had some really interesting point, I might add. Take a listen.
First person you'd pick in NBA history, other than yourself, to hit a clutch shot?
Kobe probably would be one. Two, Jerry West was like my first thought, because I thought I had to like go back.
Oh, no.
But no, I would say Kobe.
Yeah?
Because he literally can will the ball in the basket. Like broken finger, you know, knee, whatever. Like he can make the ball go in.
Just makes it happen.
Is this proof that Kobe is the most clutch player in NBA history?
No, it's
proof. Come on, y'all.
that he didn't want to say Robert Horry. That's who he should have said. That's who knocked down all the clutch shots.
Come on, Whitlock.
And, you know, and then, of course, Michael Jordan would actually be... No, you know what? He's wrong. Who? The number one guy to end the game with is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and the Skyhook. That's who takes the last shot for me.
I hate to be a prisoner of the moment, but maybe Steph Curry for me. Like, I just respect his shooting range and his percentages too much. But Kobe, because of the combo of him making it and not scared to take it. So I got to respect that. But, nah, not number one for me, Kobe.
Are there some Kobe moments that I'm not remembering? Does he have the Byron Russell moment? What a Kobe.
He got over 30 game winning shots, 450 plus point games in a row. This guy, come on, y'all. I'm not about to go to the history.
Here you go.
Y'all ain't made me
take off
today.
The Warren Central Kobe jersey.
I need to put one on.
Where are the Kobe game winning playoff
Phoenix
shots?
Suns, I want to say 06. Put the fist up.
All right, I'm a hater.
Yeah.
My second favorite segment, approval ratings, is here.
He ranking segments now.
My 10th favorite uncle, Uncle Jimmy's here.
There you go.
Get him.
My 10th favorite.
What is going on?
Yeah, where are you off to today?
Yeah.
Man, look, I done told you stay out of my personal business, man. This ain't my real job, man.
We need to stay in your closet. You're not matching. Like, what budget cuts are you going through?
Hey, man, look, I got to get it done, man. I'm out here trying to get it done, son. What's wrong with you?
And what do you have on under that? Like, are you going out after work? Like,
I got another job I got to do, man. You're in my personal business.
Can I see that echo? Can I see that show? What rap album you didn't sell to have on some echo, man?
Look, man, come on, man. Come on, man. You got to know, man, look, I just got that little supervisor gig over here building up, working on the Rams Stadium, man. Yeah, man.
Charter Stadium.
In Inglewood, you know what I'm saying? Shout out to Inglewood.
Hey, he hood. He said that little gig. You know you hood when everything little.
Oh, man. You know?
Go over there.
Hey, man,
time.
I'm out here trying to keep my money on that behind, man. You know? Hey, man, it's about options, man. Options is your key to life, man. Listen to me, young blood. Listen to me.
Hey, you got your work pass on, too. Boy, you
come on, man.
Hey, we got to move on. All right, Jimmy, earlier in the show, we were talking about Le'Veon Bell. That's who our approval rating today. Here's a clip from earlier in the show. Le'Veon is attention-starved and attention-hungry. The Steelers are about to play tonight on Thursday Night Football in a huge game against the Carolina Panthers. And ain't nobody really feeling Le'Veon Bell right now. It's James Conner and what the Steelers and Big Ben and Mike Tomlin are doing. This is just, hey, look at me. You got kids, Marcellus. I know you can recognize this.
I do. And Whitlock, you shouldn't be so proud of being this old without any kids. Won't you settle down? Get your life in order, man. Get a wife, get you a kid. American dream. Live it, brother.
Yeah,
Let me say this. You are living the dream.
All right, Jimmy, what did you think of our discussion about Le'Veon Bell?
Hey, well, man, first of all, let me tell you, Marcellus, you're absolutely right. I'm glad you told my nephew. You got to get some to get some. I'm just going to let you know that, all right? I'm just telling you that, all right?
What did you think of our discussion about Le'Veon Bell?
Le'Veon Bell, man, that's the real deal, man. He the real deal. I told you that a long time ago. Did I not?
You did say that.
Okay, I mean, but here's my question. Oh, that's fine, well, and good. How come we can't talk about the white log?
You mean the Whitlaw?
Yeah. How come we can't talk about the Whitlaw? I mean, for real, man. How come I can't talk about the Great White Hype?
Oh, that might go off the rails.
I can't talk about the Great White Hype?
Because that might go off the rails.
No, man. I mean, what? I can't talk about your boy, Christian McCaffrey.
We listening. You got.
I can't talk about it.
What's the take? You got a take on it? What's the issue?
Look here. Here's all I'm trying to say, man. Every time Cam do something good, somebody got to go and start bringing up Christian Marciano. There they go. Every time they do something, somebody want to go brag up Christian Marciano.
It's not Marciano, it's McCaffrey. Christian McCaffrey.
You know what the hell I'm talking about, man. You know who I'm talking about, man. Every time you start the conversation, y'all go bring him up. Let me tell y'all something. I guarantee you this. Le'Veon Bell whoop Christian McCaffrey's ass if you give him the opportunity. I guarantee it.
How you gonna make a fight, man?
Man, it's about money right now.
Can we all just get along?
Hold on. We're running out of time. We gotta go to our approval ratings.
Oh, yeah. We got some work to do.
Yeah, this is why we kept you out of it. We gotta go to our approval ratings. Whew. Look, I've got Le'Veon at a 70. Previously, I had him at a 74. I got him 20 in job performance, 20 in all-time greatness, 12 in character, and 18 in authenticity for a total of 70, down 4 points for me.
Damn, I ain't even played a game this year, and job performance is dropping. Come on, Whitlock, what you doing, man?
He ain't played a game. James Conner looks great.
Oh, so now it's James Conner's approval rating as well. Let me give it to you in Le'Veon Bell fashion. First of all, it got to be upside down. Respect to what I got here right now.
Oh, my God. How did you do that?
I got a little young daughter. She got the app. Okay, there we go. Job performance, 24. You know why I went up for him in job performance?
Because James Conner looks so good?
Nah, yep. A little deeper than that, because every single player is taking notice of the stance he's taken and respect due to a guy who's out there trying to get his money and protect his body. I love that. All-time greatness, I got it 19 a little bit. Dropped that a little bit.
Yeah,
because
Conner looks so good.
Stop that system. Character, 17, and authenticity, 23.
The man's been suspended 2 or 3 times. How can his character be a 17?
To take this stance, this is a difficult thing that he's doing, man. That's a man of character.
You got even ghost status. We're out of time, man.
Character.